Tetra or something.
Something like that, yes. Yeah. And I didn't. The inventor of computers and things of that general nature.
I didn't either. I just say the smartest person. Just got a picture.
Where you going? You probably know. Came up and brought me a photograph of this.
No, my guy.
Monster. 30 years ago.
You were using this back?
Yeah, we brought it to this country here, yeah, and we had it in use here for quite a while. This thing was built in 1940.
Mm-hmm. The analog computer for a V2 motion simulation.
Yeah. And one portion is still in operation, and this is the mechanical portion. I think this they still have an astrionics. The rest of it was taken apart because they needed some transistors, and not transistors, we didn't have at that time. tubes and components and stuff. And so it was cannibalized, it's gone, most of it. Okay, now, what good can I do you here?
Well, something about the role of the computation.
Can I still make dirty jokes, or is everything already on the tape here?
It's on, but go ahead
it's
and
on.
Make whatever
yeah.
jokes you want to.
No. Maybe ladies hear this later on, and I have to be careful, yeah.
Well, this is the age of moral freedom.
Yeah.
The use of the computation computers and Saturn program, work with breadboards, perhaps, if you were doing that. The development of automated checkout, ground support equipment, things of that nature.
Well, in general, I think I can say this. The if you compare the Saturn development with what was done long before, for instance, the V2 development or the Redstone missile development, then there is quite a change. You probably have noticed that none of the Saturns failed, and in spite of the fact that the Saturn is a much, much more complicated vehicle than the Redstone was, or even the V2 was, and we have fired thousands, I think, of V2s to find out what was wrong until those things were really, really worked. And with the rest of missile development, it was better, but not much. We had learned things, but we haven't learned so much with the Saturn that all of a sudden things don't go wrong anymore. And there must be another reason. And the reason is that before we really fly, we can fly the thing in the laboratory now thousands of times. In other words, our computers and simulators we have today enable us to do a much, much better job than we did before. We don't have to use actual hardware to test it anymore. We can do this now with simulated systems. And the simulation is done with computers, with analog computers or hybrid computers or digital computers. And this is finally the reason, let's say, in my opinion, the most important reason that the Saturn vehicle worked so well without any failure so far. Now cross your fingers that the remaining two army we have left here also work. There's no reason why they shouldn't.
About what time did you start introducing this kind of computational modeling?
Well, we did this really in the time of V2. The picture I've showed you here of this thing, this thing was used in the early development of the V2, and it helped a little bit there already, because there were quite a number of things which could not be explained even through experiments, because after the V2 was has disappeared in the clouds, then there wasn't much you could see anymore, and the telemetry business was not so well developed yet that we really could see everything. There were quite a few things which we just couldn't understand. We did some computations naturally using desk computers and pencil and paper and so on. But after all, this was a kind of a crude affair. We had to linearize our equations, and the most of the interesting things we linearized out of them. So they did not really represent what went on anymore. Mm-hmm. And so there was some idea to use a model of the rocket, an electronic model, to study the behavior of the rocket a little bit more, not only of the rocket, but of the whole flight, also the aerodynamic behavior and so on, and the behavior of the control system and so on. So in other words, we developed a simulator, and this simulator is what we nowadays contains, what we nowadays call analog computers. This thing had integrators in it and adding circuits and all the ingredients we have today in analog computers. And there we learned quite a bit, but after all we had only one or two of those things going, and the technique was not so far developed yet, so we still needed thousands of test firings. Not test firings in the test end, but test launches. And today we don't have small things anymore. The way you see them on the picture here today, our computers fill a whole room. And we can do many, many more sophisticated simulations and find out easier what went on. For instance, the Pogo problem, the Saturn suffered one sickness, the thing behaved like a Pogo stick, with a little bit exaggeration. Was a longitudinal oscillation. The question was now, where does this come from? So instead of making test firings or even too many test stands, launches, or even instead of making too many test firings in the test stand, the whole business was simulated, and the simulated model then behaved exactly the way the Saturn system, the propulsion system, behaved. And then we had enough time to simulate to study this business. We didn't have to shut the test off because the fuel was gone or something like this. You just, if you want to have more fuel, you just push the button and turn the knob. So so finally we found out what this was. At least this was one contribution to the Saturn development. Which comes to my mind. Naturally, in general, all kind of things where we're simulated. The word simulation really might need some better definition, because some people say even the computation of a trajectory by a computer is a simulation of its flight. Well, I would not call this a simulation, I would call this a computation. But anyway, it was one of our contributions here, the computation of to the whole development of this thing.
But you made the point that early in the program there were a lot of, say, Redstone and Jupiter failures, and it was the introduction of what was the introduction of more computerized equipment, more sophisticated computerized equipment, or your ability to put the right kind of information in?
Both. We have better computers now. We have larger and cheaper computers. We can process more data and reduce more data, mm-hmm. and we can really squeeze more information out of what the test launches gave us.
And so these things came in about 59, and about when you started the Saturn program.
Yeah. Well, we actually started our computation business here in around 1952, something like this, with a very primitive computer manufactured, digital computer manufactured by IBM, card program calculator, and from there on we had more sophisticated ones until we finally ended up with an IBM 7904 and even a couple of them. And now we have a UNIVAC computer system, an 1108 system, consisting of three large computers coupled together. Anyway, this is our digital capability. And the analog computers, the real simulators, were brought over from Germany originally, because there were no computers available at that time in this country. And we started then to develop a new one here. This thing was for quite a while, and I think still is, in Astronics Laboratory in use.
You develop your own analog computer here?
Yeah. before computers became available commercially here.
Mm-hmm.
That differed a little bit from the design you have here. For instance, we did not use DC amplifiers. We used AC amplifiers. I don't know how I should go into technical details like this, but maybe they are of interest to somebody. You can always strike them out. DC amplifier has no stable zero position, because you cannot differentiate between the signal and the supply voltages, supply current, and so on. It's all DC, or slowly varying DC. And so you don't know exactly, did the amplifier change, or was this a signal? If you have a carrier system, which has a carrier of, let's say, 1,000 cycles or so, then the signal, the 1,000 cycle signal, only changes if you, only shows changes if you change it. The amplifier itself cannot change it. And since the supply voltages have another frequency, namely the frequency zero, you can now distinguish between changes in the amplifier and changes in the signal. And to add AC voltages together is not more complicated than to add DC voltages together. The only problem was integration. You can integrate a DC current easily because you just send the current into a condenser and the voltage on the condenser shows the integral of this, the summation of this current. And with AC, this cannot be done this easy, but you can put rectifiers in and rectify this and modulate it back later on, or you can use a kind of a ring modulator between your amplifier and the condenser. This makes the condenser think you had a DC amplifier and the amplifier think you have an AC condenser, so to speak. And this worked fine, and this was the way we developed or we built this computer here. Nowadays, we have made more progress in the stabilization of DC amplifiers, and the DC technique is now what's used.
Have other computer companies adopted some of these things?
There were some AC amplifiers in this country after we were interrogated in Fort Bliss and all over.
Yeah.
But they stayed only for a couple of years, because in parallel to this was the development of stable DC amplifiers, which was a necessity for their use in analog computers.
So when you brought the analog computers over, you're talking about 1945, 46. That time?
They were brought over in 1946, I think. And when did we start to develop one here? This was around 1950, probably at this time we started our own development. It can also, let's see, maybe it was 1950.
Mm-hmm.
When we came here to Redstone.
Yeah.
We did some paper designs in Fort Bliss, but we didn't build anything there. At least not that I remember.
Well, so you were using computers for the flight simulation.
Yeah.
Now, were you using computers this time also in engineering designs?
Yeah. Any engineering design naturally needs computations. You have to compute stresses and strains and all kind of things. And if you can use computers, you can do those things faster, you can do more accurately. And things like heat transfer, for instance, from the motor to other portions of the other parts of the rocket, from the flame, or from re-entering bodies to the interior. This is usually a very cumbersome computation. This leads to the solution of partial differential equations, and that's a messy affair. You have to do this numerically, because and those things are nonlinear and closed solutions are not available and will not be available for quite a while, I have the impression. So to do those things numerically with pencil and paper is cumbersome. Cannot be done. For instance, just to invert a matrix, something comes into my mind. There was a book which mentioned this. To invert a 98 or something by 98 matrix, somebody has figured out this takes a man with a desk computer, pencil, and paper, 2 years, 8 hours per day. No coffee break, no vacations, nothing. 2 years, for 2 years. And one of our modern computers now does this business, I think, in 30 seconds. That's about the situation.
So it's a big help.
This is a big help. Naturally, what has to be done also in this area is not only to make the computer faster, computers faster, but also to develop new mathematical techniques. And this is also was also done here. Dr. Feilberg, for instance, in the computation laboratory, developed new integration methods to integrate differential equations, trajectories, and so on. And he has made quite some success. He could press the time down to about a couple of percent of what was needed before, using methods a couple of hundred years old. And also the accuracy naturally is much, much higher. For instance, using one of his methods, you could make a trip from here around the moon and back. In other words, a trip of about 500,000 miles, roughly, and come up with a computational error of 0.001 millimeter. Now this is the computational error. This does not mean that if you actually apply this thing with a control system, that it would be that accurate. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
But the error in the computation would be of this magnitude, the truncation error and the round-off error combined.
When you begin to plot some of these things out, are you able to plot in then just as a fairly easy thing anomalies in an actual flight? What would happen if the jet didn't go as long as you expected? Is it easy then to come out with alternative modes when you're plotting these mathematical things?
Yeah, well, let me tell you one thing. We had evaluated Saturn flights, well, earlier even than the Saturn. Start already with the Redstone and with the Jupiter development. We have what we did when we fire those things at the Cape is that we have the other lights to follow them and to determine the actually flown trajectory this way. Naturally, the other light bases have to be known very accurately in geodesic coordinates. Otherwise, you could not predict. Could, or let's say measure good trajectory. Now if you measure such a trajectory, you would use more theodolite stations than absolutely necessary. Actually you need only three to determine a point in space. Okay. Now we use many more to make sure that if one of them had to look through a cloud that you still had enough. And also to verify the accuracy. And now to use all of those measurements, we use a technique known as least square technique, invented by Gauss originally. Gauss used this to make to compute orbits of celestial bodies, planets, and so on, to get the errors, the observation errors out. And we use this method for the same purpose here, and. We found out that sometimes when one particular station was heavily involved, that the sum of the squares in this process was excessive. And so we experimented around with this business and just located arbitrarily this station a little bit sideways, a couple of yards. And to our greatest surprise, then the sum of the squares, which gives an indication of the errors involved, became less. And so we finally arrived at a minimum there also, and we came out, well, we found under, we could find out under what conditions, under what new coordinates for this station, assumed coordinates, would really the sum of the squares be a new minimum. Okay, and we gave this information to the geodetic people at the Cape, and they found out that the coordinates were wrong, and that ours were right. In other words, the station was not where they thought it would be. things like this you can, for instance, find out through your computational analysis.
Mm.
And very similar things you can also find out during the flight, naturally, what happens, what has happened, and so on.
Well, this is a computational thing you did basically in support of, or at least was involved in support of another center, Kennedy.
No, at that time not. At that time Kennedy was still a part of Marshall.
Oh, I'd forgotten that. Okay. Well, the question I was leading to then, did you get into the business of doing computational models or analysis of one kind or another for contractors, say Boeing or North American or Douglas?
Well, not directly, I think. We have naturally in the Pogo investigation, we did our own work here, but what we did is we made our computers, our software, our hardware and our software available to contractors.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not because our computers were better, but they were cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
ours were purchased and some other people paid rent for them and so on. So we made them available to contractors and contractors used them also.
Mm-hmm.
Boeing used them, Lockheed used them, and everybody else used them. Besides
mm-hmm.
the use of their own facilities. Yeah.
Good. While we're on that subject, could you explain the relationship between your facility here and the computer facility at Slidell in support of Michoud and Mississippi Test?
Yeah, when Michoud was established and Mississippi Test site was established, there was the question of who should do the computations there, the data processing service and simulation service and data reduction and all this kind of business we are doing
mm-hmm.
here. And there were several alternatives. Either we could tell the companies, help yourself and do your own computations, buy your computers and just write it on the bill. Now we found out that to do this would be mighty expensive. And we found out that a combined center, a combined facility for all of those contractors, for Boeing, for Mason Rust, for Chrysler, for GE and others, the others who use Mississippi Test, for instance, that a combined facility would have lots of advantages and would be much, much cheaper. So we established the Slidell Computer Center. We used Slidell because it was right in the middle between Mississippi Test and Michoud,
mm-hmm.
and the building was available. We inherited this for $1
mm-hmm.
from the Federal Aviation Agency. It didn't need this building anymore. It was empty. And so we packed full of computers and established Slidell. And the computation laboratory here, we operated this Slidell Computer Center for a while using our own civil service people and our own support contractor, which was GE at
here.
That time.
From here.
From here. We sent people down. And after a while then, it was determined that they should have their own support contractor. One of our people, Mr. Reeves, stayed then there and became the manager of Slidell. And was separated from the computation laboratory. And Slidell then performed a very good function for all of those contractors. Much cheaper than if the contractors would have had their own facility.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them didn't like it at the beginning, but there was no way around because we saved quite a bit of money and it worked. And the Saturns flew, see.
Is that one of the reasons the contractors didn't like it, is they would have rather established their own to maybe be more profitable for them to have their own facility?
Yeah, it was more convenient, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
See, if you have a government agency looking into your computations and your records, then it's easy to find out how often you come and how many reruns you make and when something went wrong and what should be done easier and so on. All this criticism was not what they liked. And this, I think, was the reason they wanted to have this themselves, not profit reasons. They made more money on building the Saturn. It was more convenient for them, less chance of being criticized for things.
Later on, when the business fell off at Slidell and the need for computations decreased, you're still running the center, are you not?
Slidell is still in operation, but the situation has changed. We do not have this multi-contractor environment anymore. And we also do not have this heavy workload anymore. The Apollo project had. The Apollo project was one of the largest projects ever existed, which ever existed, and Slidell was tailored to do this job. Now we have some people in Mississippi Test, some tenants, like the National Oceanographic Service and weather people and so on, but this is by far not equivalent to the Apollo project. So Slidell is now not used to the fullest extent. The computation laboratory here in Marshall, however, is underdimensioned for its job and is overloaded. So there is now at the moment the problem how to use Slidell remotely. Naturally, this can be done. It costs some money, but it's not quite settled what our management wants really to do.
Didn't you try to remove one of the big computers from there at one time and bring it back up to Marshall, since you had management responsibility, and Stennis and Jim Eastland kind of stepped in to prevent that?
Yeah, well, I don't know exactly what happens. This was something between them and other headquarters. But after all, there is Mississippi Test. Mississippi Test is quite an investment in buildings and roads and so on. And they naturally want to utilize this. So that's why they are trying to get companies in to use this and other government services. And naturally, they need a computation support for this business. So they try to make sure that the computers did not leave there. This probably was the reason. If you want to know it exactly, you have to talk to the senators and to another headquarters. Don't know this exactly, and I like my job.
What about GE? Are they still your support contractor?
No, we changed in the meantime.
What year was that? 65, 66?
We had GE for about 7 years, I think, or 8 years. And after this, in about 68 or something, 67 or 68, the contract was put on it again. There's a policy in NASA to put this on the market every couple of years, now every 4 years, I think. And this time, Computer Scientist Corporation won the bid, and they have the contract now. They took over some personnel which had left GE at that time when they stepped out. But they also brought in lots of their own people.
I was going to ask you about what kind of dislocations you suffered when one company, which has been with you a long time, as GE was, moved out. Can you say how you felt one way or another about that?
Well, naturally, this is always a drawback. There's no doubt about this. The utilization of everything goes down because you have to train a new contractor. Even if the contractor is a specialist in this field, you have to get him accustomed to your methods and so on. Fortunately, at that time, we still had an in-house capability in the computation laboratory, in programming and so on, which nowadays we do not have anymore. So this we could be bridged to a certain extent. Now, if we should have to change contractors again, having no in-house capability anymore, we will really feel this, and this will cost the taxpayer quite a bit of money. But there's nothing I can do about this.
Why did your in-house capability go down over? Did you think it was cheaper to use?
No, the Congress of the United States appropriated less money to NASA, and we couldn't pay the people anymore, and they had to go. We needed the money for other purposes, which might not have been a bad idea either. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway, that is the reason why we had the contract.
What if